welcome to Feel the Good. Hope you are doing well and starting this week off. This is my first episode that I'm dropping on a Tuesday, so I hope it wasn't too much of a change for everyone. Still starting off the beginning of the week with all of you, which I so enjoy. This episode is so special. I'm giddy with excitement about it. And I'm going to keep this intro really short because this episode, this conversation ran long because I'm chatting with a guest that I could have probably chatted with for multiple hours based on her just knowledge, and she's just a kindred spirit. So before I introduce her, I'm going to sort of condense what I usually say in my intro, keep my moment of gratitude short for all of you. But really quickly, thank you so much for rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts, y'all. So appreciate you. If you keep doing that, more people find the podcast. So please do go do that if you haven't already. I would love you forever and appreciate you. The other thing is you can always contact me on my social media at ShalinyVMH or on my website at ShaliniVMH.com. I am there. You can connect with me. So many of you reach out and tell me what you're loving about the conversations or some of your takeaways. I love hearing from you. So please do connect with me. I really enjoy it. Now, as I mentioned, the moment of gratitude, I start out with it in every episode because I think it puts you in a positive headspace, and I invite you to join me. So I'm going to give you a few moments to think about what you're grateful for, to have your own moment of gratitude, and then I'm going to share mine. Okay, so I think I have shared this moment of gratitude before on an earlier episode, but I'm going to tweak it a little bit here, which is I am so grateful for romantic comedies, which I have said in an earlier episode. I think my Danny Pellegrino conversation, we chat about Nora Ephron and we chat about You've Got Mail. But the thing that I will add is the gratitude towards Nora Ephron, because these movies that she has created, these stories have stood the test of time. They make me so happy. They make me feel so good. They comfort me. I return to them all the time in any mood that I'm in. And I'm so grateful to her that she created these stories. Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, Julie and Julia. I'm a big fan and admirer of her books. I Remember Nothing, I Feel Bad About My Neck, Wallflowers of the Orgy, Crazy Salad, you know, the list goes on. But the fact that she shared so much of her genius with us and that it still lives on is just, I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, may she rest in peace, but her legacy lives on, and it means a lot to a lot of people, including myself and my guest that I'm about to share. So I just had to give my moment of gratitude to her and to all the people that are still creating these beautiful stories for us to escape into, to feel comforted by, to cheer us up, and to feel the good with. I hope you had a lovely moment of gratitude. If you want to share it with me, you heard my social media channels, you heard my website, contact me, let me know. I would love to hear what you're grateful for this week. My guest, though, that I've been teasing is Erin Carlson. She is the author of I'll Have What She's Having, How Nora Ephron's Three Iconic Films Saved the Romantic Comedy. Y'all, I bought this book when it was first published a few years ago. I read it cover to cover. It is so good. Erin is such an incredible writer. She has interviewed so many sources, and it goes through all of Nora's sort of career, in a sense, but mostly it covers When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and You've Got Mail. And You've Got Mail is such a special movie to me because it's fall, and as Erin coins it, it's Efron season. And it's just a movie for me that makes me feel so good, makes me feel the good. So I thought she would be the perfect guest to sort of have a very fun chat about this movie that I love so much, about a movie she loves so much, about this wonderful filmmaker and writer and woman that we admire so much, Nora Ephron. And so I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Erin is really smart. She's fun. She is my people. I already feel very close to her. You can probably tell in our conversation just how much we hit it off. And just a little bit about her. She's a journalist and she's worked for The Hollywood Reporter, The Associated Press. Her work has appeared in Vanity Fair, Glamour, Fortune, The Los Angeles Times. And she wrote this book, I'll Have What She's Having, How Nora Ephron's Three Iconic Films Saved the Romantic Comedy, and Queen Meryl, which is another great book about the Queen, Meryl Streep. So definitely go check out Erin's books. You can find them wherever books are sold, or I will tag her website and all of her social to the episode notes so that you can become acquainted with her. She's so much fun. And I think you're really going to love this conversation. If nothing else, it'll put you in a good mood. It'll give you a stroll down memory lane. If this is a movie that means a lot to you, you're going to love what we're going to talk about. If you're not even familiar with this movie, I think you're going to be intrigued to watch it and be interested in it. Or if you just sort of feel like, but you like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, we talk about them too, and all of the special cast in this movie, because Erin got to chat with a bunch of them while she was compiling her book. And it's just a really special conversation. And I'm so happy that she gave me her time. So here is my Feel the Good conversation with Erin Carlson.
Who's at every door? Who's at every door?
Welcome.
Dear friend, I like to start my notes to you as if we're already in the middle of a conversation. I pretend that we're the oldest and dearest friends as opposed to what we actually are. People who don't know each other's names.
Morning, Mr. Fox.
And met in a chat room where we both claimed we'd never been before. What will NY152 say today, I wonder? I turn on my computer. I wait impatiently as it connects. I go online and my breath catches in my chest until I hear three little words. You got mail. I hear nothing, not even a sound on the streets of New York, just the beat of my own heart. I have mail from you.
So, Erin, I am so excited to chat with you today. I mean, I think I told you this when I was organizing the conversation, how, you know, I love your book. I love I'll Have What She's Having, How Nora Ephron's Three Iconic Films Saved the Romantic Comedy. It's so good. I bought it like right when it came out. So this is such a pleasure to chat with you. But also, You've Got Mail. I mean, talk about, my podcast is called Feel the Good. It makes me feel all sorts of good. And also, funnily enough, like if my husband comes home and it's on, he'll sort of know sometimes that it's been like a crappy day because I'll put it on for comfort food. You know, it just feels good to watch it. It's like a warm blanket. I mean, what does it feel like for you when you watch it? And again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited
be on your podcast. I'm a big fan of you, and I think you're adorable. And I feel like you are.
Well, same. I think you are too.
You are a kindred spirit. I mean, you've got male like fans. We find each other somehow. And back to
I love all the stuff that people tag you in, Erin, by the way. People always are tagging you in like any Nora Ephron reference, like from When Harry Met Sally, even. You have this hilarious one that somebody did, like the When Harry Met Sally monologue with their cat. Like it was like a TikTok video where the cat was Sally.
Oh my God. It was so funny. And I wish I could find it for everyone. But I don't even know where you could find it because I'm not on TikTok and I should be on TikTok. But people tag me on When Harry Met Sally TikToks. You've got male TikToks. And Nora's films have created a life of their own. They span generations. And it's like the next iteration of social media, whatever that is. I'm sure you'll find a When Harry Met Sally meme.
Well, first of all, where did you see You've Got Mail? Because obviously, Erin's book does write about, she writes about Sleepless in Seattle. She writes about When Harry Met Sally in her book. And you also just cover sort of Nora's career and life. But I wanted to do a deep dive into You've Got Mail because this time of year, I just feel like this is You've Got Mail season almost. It's Ephron season, which I know you always say. I love that on your Instagram that you posted that. But also, I just feel like You've Got Mail takes you through the fall. It takes you through Christmas. It's like, it's just this sort of time movie for me. I always watch it during this time of year.
Well, I remember the first time I saw it. I think it was in the fall. It came. Oh, yeah. It came out December 18th, 1998 was when it premiered. And I saw it with my mother because we were major Meg Ryan fans. I had the Meg Ryan haircut in high school, which was not the same.
You did?
Yes, it was.
Wait, you had that like feathery, like
oh
short.
My God. And I remember when I walked into school and my friends were like, you know, when you get a bad haircut and your friends, they don't want to tell you it's bad, so they just say nothing.
Oh,
and that's
no.
Worse than telling you it's bad. Meg Ryan's haircut in the 90s was so iconic. It was like the Rachel.
Yes.
So there was only one hairdresser who could do that haircut, and that was Sally Hershberger.
Yeah.
She was the hairdresser to the stars. And if anyone is a fan of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Lisa Rinna still has that haircut, and she's had it for 30 years.
You are so right. But I haven't ever thought about that. But yeah, and
but
that Meg
Ryan started
is
it.
High maintenance. It's high maintenance. So you have to like you yeah. didn't have a stylist come and do your hair like on
no.
the set of You've Got Mail. So
my poor hairdresser Tony in Batavia, Illinois, like tried to recreate it and you just couldn't do it. You just couldn't do it. And then I had tried the Rachel, and there was only one girl in high school who could pull that off. And she was a cheerleader and a senior. And she had the most perfect
Rachel too.
Jennifer Aniston wave.
Oh, yeah. It didn't fly on me either. So very, very similar to your You've Got Mail Meg Ryan look. I tried that too.
I adore Meg Ryan. And I adored Sleepless in Seattle. So when I saw it with my mom, I had pretty high expectations and the movie exceeded them. So I bought the VHS. I might be aging myself here, but I'm young at heart. But I bought the VHS, which is a video cassette tape. And I watched it every Saturday. Like every Saturday after the movie came, after the tape came out. And my mom was like, do you like any other movie? Because my mom was a big cinephile. She would take me to see like Memento, Amelie, and all these foreign films, French films. And I just wanted to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, The Breakfast Club, You've Got Mail, and Sleepless in Seattle. And that was the origins of my obsession with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks and Nora.
I know.
It goes way back.
I know. It's so funny. I mean, I saw it in the movie theater with a bunch of friends. Actually, it was a big group of Indian kids. We all hung out together. And it was like the girls and the guys, and the guys actually went and saw like a, I don't know, an action movie like that came
Armageddon?
Out or, yeah, like, or something like around that time. And we all like piled in, and it was like a whole row of us. Like we filled like the whole row watching these Indian girls watching You've Got Mail. And, you know, I have to say, like, there's something about, well, one, Meg Ryan. Okay, let's just talk about Meg Ryan because we're talking about her a little bit anyway, right? I mean, obviously you got her iconic haircut. But she is, I mean, you used the word adorable. There's something so adorable about her and so magical about her, don't you think? I mean, she's sort of magic, especially in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Like the actors who starred with her, like the actress who played Christina, the shop girl.
Heather Burns, right?
I love her. She is one of my favorite people I've ever interviewed. But she...
Did you interview her for the book?
Yes.
You interviewed her for the book?
Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
She took me to a vegan restaurant in the East Village. Like, she's like, she's that character. She's
yeah.
like, she's cool. So she was telling me, because she was had just started out as an actress. This was her first movie and she was nervous. So she had to learn how to like, where to hit her marks. And she was learning from Meg Ryan, but Meg was just this kind of, Meg was a normal person. She's a very normal person who does normal things. But when the camera starts to roll, she becomes Meg Ryan in quotes. And she's just luminous and angelic. And to play Kathleen Kelly, you have to have this percolating joy, which Greg Kinnear told me that Meg has. This joy that percolates, and she would erupt into giggle fits on the set of You've Got Mail, and Nora would have to wait until she stopped giggling to do the next scene, to do the next take.
He said, wait, he said what joy? He said this, percolating joy?
This percolating joy.
I love that.
She came onto set, and she had to have this joy at the very top. In order to play that role, you have to... you have to be happy and exuberant, and you have to
that energy.
You
have to keep that energy. Yeah.
Otherwise, Kathleen Kelly would be, you know, Patricia Eden, Parker Pokey, or Parker Pokey.
Parker Pokey.
Parker Posey.
I know she makes coffee nervous.
She does.
I feel like you and I related on that when we first sort of chatted before we actually had this conversation where we were both like drinking coffee and we're highly caffeinated gals here. But, you know, sort of to go back and talk about, you know, the actual movie. One, I wanted to ask you, though, before we dive in even more, is what do rom-coms and what do Nora's movies mean to you? Because obviously you wrote this whole book, you're dedicating it to these three iconic films of hers, these romantic comedies. So what do they mean to you?
Oh gosh, they mean everything. When I was living in New York City, I lived in New York for 9 years. I was a journalist and I lived in a studio apartment in the East Village, which I loved. But sometimes it could get lonely because I'm from Chicago and a lot of the East Coast guys were just so different from me. And, you know, you could get homesick sometimes. And they were a lot edgier than I am. And I missed the sweetness of some of the men in the Midwest. And I would watch, just like I did in high school, every weekend I would watch You've Got Mail, Sleepless in Seattle on Sunday nights or whatever. And I just wanted to meet a Joe Fox. I wanted to meet a Tom Hanks or somebody like that. So I became obsessed with the movies again. And then one day, my friend Jennifer Armstrong and I were talking, and she was like, we should do a romantic comedy location tour of the Upper West Side. So Jen and I started this tour of Nora Ephron's rom-com.
I could not believe it when I learned that about you. I think that is so amazing. My husband and I dragged him on because, you know, there are some walking tours online where they just show you like what the locations are. So if you're a New Yorker, you can just sort of walk and pass some of the places that Nora filmed, you know, or some of the locations. And I dragged my husband on a day, which he was fine with because he also loves all of Nora's stuff too. And we did our own little walking tour, but I wish we could have gone on yours when you hosted one.
I would have anytime anyone wants a tour, if I'm in New York City, if you're in New York City, I am so there because I never get tired of walking past her apartment or Joe's apartment on Riverside Drive.
Or Cafe Lalo, which is so much fun.
Cafe Lalo.
The cheese shop that was used for like the exterior of, see, I'm the same as you. I'm your same. I've got an obsession here. But yeah, it's sort of a love letter to really that neighborhood, right? I mean, this movie, You've Got Mail. But anyway, you were saying, we'll get into that, but you were saying you started this tour, you'd been watching it, and it sort of made you feel more at home in New York City.
It did, because you start to find your people. And Jen and I reenacted the Cafe Lalo scene for our for the people on tour. So she was Dave Chappelle. Like, that is Kathleen Kelly. And I was Joe Fox. And it was so nerdy. But it was so fabulous.
Did you do the grabbing of the fence? And you're like, she has to be. Like, before he tells her the Kathleen Kelly moment where he's like, if you don't like Kathleen Kelly, you're not going to like this girl. See, this is how nerdy we are, everybody. And if you're listening and you're this nerdy too, well then, welcome. You're with your people. You're with your people. Yes.
All right. See what I see? You see her?
Nah. Oh, wait. Yeah. I see a very beautiful girl. Oh, she's fine. She's fine.
Ooh. I knew it.
She's gorgeous.
I knew she would be. I knew it.
But no book. All right. Okay, wait. Wait a minute. All right, look, there's a book with the flowers, so this gotta be her.
And what does she look like?
Can't see her. Waiter's blocking.
Damn it.
Oh, hold on. He's moving.
Yeah?
Ah.
Can you see her? Can you see her?
Yeah.
And?
She's very pretty.
She is! I knew she would be! She had to be! She had to be!
You know what? She almost has the same coloring as that Kathleen Kelly person.
Kathleen Kelly of the little bookstore.
Well, why not? You said you thought she was attractive.
Absolutely, yes. Why not? Who cares about Kathleen Kelly?
Well, if you don't like Kathleen Kelly, I can tell you right now, you ain't gonna like this girl.
Why not?
Because it is Kathleen Kelly.
I did that, and nobody on the tour like thought we were crazy. They loved it. So I found my people that way. And then when I was like, you know, I'd like to write a book. I'm an entertainment journalist by trade, so I know how to interview people and piece it all together into a narrative. So what would I write about if I wrote about anything? And I thought about You've Got Mail. And obviously, you can't just write a book about You've Got Mail, which I would. But like my publisher was like, you need Sleepless in Seattle. You need When Harry Met Sally. And that allowed me to explore the whole arc of Nora Ephron and her evolution as a filmmaker through writing and directing these rom-coms, which people still love so much that there is an Ephron season.
They have held up so well, haven't they? I mean, yeah. I still find new people that have seen the movies for the first time and are in love with them, or it becomes again this thing where you want to watch it, you want to curl up and watch it because it does make you feel at home. It does make you feel comforted or feel good. It makes you feel good.
You know what surprises me? The men who love it.
Yes.
Like, I was surprised because my book was targeted toward women, but I get tagged by men. You know, women will be like, my husband is obsessed with your book. He read the paperback like 3 times. And my husband also loves, well, he loves Tom Hanks and he loves these movies. And his favorite is When Harry Met Sally.
Yes.
But I'm surprised that, like, the response from men to it, it just warms my heart, because Nora had always set out to make romantic comedies about love between equals, but also with comedy that men could enjoy too, that was so funny and so universal that it transcends sex and gender, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's such a good point, because like I said too, you know, my husband also like enjoys Nora Ephron. I mean, she has this way with words that I think is, I mean, look, she was an essayist, right? I don't know if you read a lot of her books before you went on this journey of finding out about her movies, or if you just loved her movies, but I even read all of her essays. Like, I Remember Nothing, I Feel Bad About My Neck, Wallflowers at the Orgy. She just has such a good take. She has such an interesting take on things. And I feel like that's the other reason why I love You've Got Mail, because it's almost like a love letter to words. Like, it's like a love letter to language, because they're writing these sort of messages back and forth. And she's got tons of commentary throughout too, I feel like, her own commentary.
Oh yeah, like when they go into Starbucks and they do a little monologue.
The whole purpose of places like Starbucks is for people with no decision-making ability whatsoever to make six decisions just to buy one cup of coffee. Short, tall, light, dark, calf, decaf, low fat, non fat, etc. So people who don't know what the hell they're doing or who on earth they are can, for only $2.95, get not just a cup of coffee, but an absolutely defining sense of self. Tall, decaf, cappuccino.
Tall, decaf, cappuccino.
Yeah, and that was at, like, that was when Starbucks was new.
I know.
Not everywhere.
I know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, her dialogue is just incredible. I just want to, like, I want to go through. There's, like, a few, and I'm curious if when you were interviewing people, because you got to interview her sister, too, didn't you? Did you interview Delia? But did you actually get to interview Nora herself?
I actually didn't interview Nora. She died of leukemia in 2012, and which was very sad, because she was just kind of hitting her groove as a filmmaker too. She had just done Julie and Julia, and she was exploring other genres, even though the romantic comedy genre is, you know, very much her brand.
And she was writing Lucky Guy, which we ended up seeing on Broadway.
I never saw it.
Post her passing, because it went up after she had passed. And she did Love, Loss, and What I Wore, which I also saw on Broadway, you know, that her and Delia wrote together. But yeah, I guess you would have worked on the book after she had passed.
Yes. Right? So I got the book deal in 2015, 3 years after she died. And, you know, I want to say that if you're writing a biography, it's a pseudo biography, like, it's about her movies, but it's also very much about her. And it's a way to do a biography about someone that everyone has written about. You know, there are tons of books and, like, essays about Nora and her impact, but very few about her romantic comedies. It's like people were trivializing them in a way by not acknowledging their importance. Just because a rom-com is a feminine genre, you know, and it's not taken seriously because of that enough.
I know. It's not considered, you know, this poetic piece of film, or, you know, it's just fluffy. It's fluffy, or it's for, like you said, it's for women. It's just fluffy, you know, and in all honesty, it's, you know, some of the themes that are in these movies, and especially her movies, I think are actually, I mean, that's why they've stood the test of time, is that people connect with them still. They connect with, I mean, and You've Got Mail, there's dreams, there's wishes, there's nostalgia. There's also, you know, big business, you know, taking over a small business. I mean, real world things happening in that movie that I think, you know, people are still touched by and still moved by.
And it took on a topic that if you live in a city, you know all too well, gentrification. So when they were updating, You've Got Mail is a remake of The Shop Around the Corner, which was, this movie came out in 1940, a long time ago, starring Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan.
I watched it with my dad.
It's so good. Oh my God.
It's really good. So I highly encourage anyone to watch it. I can see why it's so funny. There's so many, when you watch it, there's so many references that even exact dialogue from that movie that she uses in You've Got Mail. Like the scene that you and your co-tour guide would act out at Cafe Lalo when Dave Chappelle says that line.
Well, if you don't like Kathleen Kelly, I can tell you right now, you ain't gonna like this girl.
I think that's straight from The Shop Around the Corner, isn't
that's
it?
Like verbatim. Word for word, because Delia Ephron, who co-wrote the movie and Nora's sister, was like, why would we mess with perfection? And, you know, otherwise, You've Got Mail is a completely different story, because Nora was like, how do we remake a work of genius, The Shop Around the Corner? And Delia was like, easy, add the internet, you know, add bookstores. At the time in the Upper West Side, the bookstore wars. So Barnes and Noble stores were coming in and squeezing out the tiny indie bookstores and forcing them basically out of business. So the same thing was happening. There was a Barnes and Noble on 83rd Street, and there was another Barnes and Noble that popped up in Lincoln Square. And in the middle, there were all these indie bookstores that were forced to close because how can you compete? How can you compete with like cheap books, legal addictive stimulant, a place to mingle and mix and be? A piazza.
I know. You're right. And isn't it funny now that, I mean, Barnes & Noble is closing. I mean, Barnes & Noble has closed a ton of locations in the city. I mean, ours in our neighborhood shut down.
And it's really
so it's fast. Like it's happening again. You know, it will constantly sort of like they were once the big guys. And now, you know, now that we have ebooks and Amazon, which is like a behemoth in and of itself in many areas. I mean, now Barnes & Noble is going. So it's interesting that sort of, again, that theme that's in that movie that's like a completely separate from, quote unquote, the fluff that, you know, but that's like a real thing that happens. I want to keep going in a second with who else you chatted with for the book, but I want to go back to the dialogue. So the dialogue in this movie, there are so many incredible lines. Obviously the one that is super famous right now because it's fall.
Don't you love New York in the fall? It makes me want to buy school supplies.
Oh.
I'm almost ready.
I would send you a bouquet of newly sharpened pencils if I knew your name and address.
Ugh. Who does not quote that during this time of year, during Ephron season right now?
If you don't quote that or know that line, then I don't know if you really like fall.
Yeah. But it's just such an interesting, I mean, that's so delicious. Like there's something so delicious about those words and the way that she wrote that. Or, you know, another one that I just love in terms of like talking about her essays and like commentary is the butterfly in the subway. The butterfly in the subway section, how, you know, she talks about how it got on 42nd and off at 59th, where I assume it was going to Bloomingdale's to buy a hat that will turn out to be a mistake, as almost all hats are. Clearly, Nora always bought hats and then regretted them.
And just like she regretted purses, she hates purses. But that line is, you know, it's an example of how Nora would take a mundane, specific detail and make it sing. Like Meg in Sleepless in Seattle peeling the apple in one long curly strip. It's the same detail, that butterfly in the subway. It seems like a small thing, but it's magic, you know, in, you know, as Nora wrote it.
Oh my gosh, I love that you put it that way. And I love that you brought up that apple, because that is so visual about that movie. I mean, I can like picture it now from Sleepless in Seattle when she's when she peels it all in one. How many, yeah. Did you find out how many takes they had to do? Did you ever find that out? Like how many takes it took to do that?
They did one take. And,
oh, continuous. Okay.
Yeah, because Nora wanted to give Meg a red apple, but Meg was like, no, I want a Granny Smith. And she peeled it in one long continuous take. But that scene, the butterfly in the subway scene, it shows you how whimsical Meg Ryan's characters are. Kathleen Kelly is whimsical, and she appreciates beauty wherever she finds it. And
oh, absolutely. And yeah. Well, and also she's a lover of books, right? She's a lover of imagination, yeah. Of losing yourself. And so, you know, just that commentary about the butterfly on the subway. I mean, how, like you said, how magical would that be to see that, you know? And then there's the humor in that too. And, you know, another line that I love that seems very Nora commentary in You've Got Mail is when her and Joe Fox, Kathleen Kelly and Joe Fox are at Cafe Lalo. And she says the line of,
Joe, just call me Joe.
Sure.
As if you were one of those stupid 22-year-old girls with no last name. Hi, I'm Kimberly. Hi, I'm Janice. Don't they know you're supposed to have a last name? It's like they're an entire generation of cocktail waitresses.
Look.
Like that is just, again, it's just, it's a little biting, but it has this sort of, it's funny and it's interesting. And anyway, I love that this movie has so much of her in it.
It does. Another line, and I love that too. And I always think about that when I'm introducing myself to somebody. Instead of, I'm Erin Carlson, I have a last name. So I thought that was very funny and very Nora. And in
Well, and also like girl, almost like in a way, sort of, you could even look at it like there's a feminist take on that too, right? Like you said, like, it's like, you're not just a first, you're your whole name, like stand in your power sort of business. I mean, we could stretch it that far, but I mean, maybe like I could see that.
I agree. Like I'm a big person with a big name, and you can't reduce me to my first name. and that's totally Nora. And through Meg Ryan, her biting commentary was softened into something that was palatable for a broader audience. So Nora's subversive feminist ideas and insights were made broadly appealing and acceptable by somebody like Meg Ryan, just like Joe Fox was edgy, and he was a cad. He put her out of business. But because he was played by Tom Hanks, he was rendered endearing and likable. Yeah. And only Tom Hanks could make Joe Fox likable. Another line I want to talk about is, which is one of my favorites, is, you know, when they're in Birdie's apartment, Joe Fox has just put, or just is about to put Kathleen Kelly out of business. She's going to lose her store. And they're sitting in Birdie's opulent apartment on Riverside Drive. And she tells Kathleen, you are daring to imagine that you could have a different life. And that is, to me, the most powerful line in the movie, because Kathleen is at the bottom of the barrel. You know, her... her store, her legacy is about to close, the store that her mother bought. And it's very empowering to hear that, you know, and say, yeah, you know, even though this bad thing is happening to me, I can turn it around and, you know, it can get better.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I feel like that I always resonate with when I watch this movie, and maybe you do as well, or some of my listeners do too. But, you know, earlier in the movie where, again, there's this delicious piece of dialogue that Kathleen says,
sometimes I wonder about my life. I lead a small life. Well, valuable, but small. And sometimes I wonder, do I do it because I like it? or because I haven't been brave. So much of what I see reminds me of something I read in a book, when shouldn't it be the other way around? I don't really want an answer. I just want to send this cosmic question out into the void. So, good night, dear void.
But yeah, it's these cosmic questions that I think we all go through. You know, am I leading the right life? Am I finding my purpose? Like, we all go through that. And yeah, there's magic. I feel like I joke, but like, I'm even that girl that I've stolen that from You've Got Mail, and I'm like, good night, dear void. Like, I'll make myself like be like asking those questions. But do you resonate with that too? Like that sort of that piece?
Oh, absolutely. And there's an undercurrent in all good romantic comedies of sadness. Like, this movie isn't afraid to go there. And there have been a lot of copycats, movies starring Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey. Not going to knock it. They're enjoyable. But they don't resonate as much because they don't, tackle these universal issues like loss, the loss.
About her mother.
The loss of your identity, the loss of a loved one, and trying to figure out who you are amidst all this.
And trying
to navigate this crazy world that we live in changing every second, and even in the Upper West Side.
I just think this movie is like, it's a love letter to words. It's like, that's what it is. And she's such an incredible writer that I think that's why it stands the test of time, is that there's all of these things that she writes. Like you said, she gets to the heart of what is human.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tom was like the more bankable star at the time. But this movie is really Meg Ryan's movie, and she worked really hard.
Well, she's like Nora's muse, right?
I mean, yeah.
And in your book, you know, it's interesting, the three romantic comedies that you're covering, Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, all the key ingredient is
Meg.
It's Meg Ryan.
But in Sleepless in Seattle, she had just had a baby, and she can't remember filming that movie because she was so busy and in a haze.
And I've been there, and I know that's true. And I think a lot of parents listening, especially moms, can attest to that.
So she doesn't remember really making it. But You've Got Mail, she was very demanding on that movie because she wanted to make Kathleen stronger.
Didn't she even change her? I read in your book that her original, the character's name was Betsy, because Delia and Noir were such fans of Pride and Prejudice, which is another sort of little nugget in the movie constantly, right? Like, she loves Pride and Prejudice, hither. And Joe Fox is like reading it and bored out of his mind or whatnot. But they wanted her name to be Elizabeth or Betsy, but Meg said it's not strong enough.
Meg hated it because that was the name of her character on the soap opera As the World Turns. And she's like, no, I can't play that. So they chose Kathleen for her. And she also, like, you know, she had brought all these ideas. Like, it was her idea in the famous caviar is a garnish dinner party scene.
What is that? What are you doing? What is that? What are you doing? You're taking all the caviar? That caviar is a garnish.
To, you know, wield a knife and like approach Joe Foss with a knife. Like, she wanted to show that Kathleen, over the course of the movie, was growing a backbone. But ironically, Joe Fox, or NY152, her email, AOL, IM chat lover, he was helping her find her voice by giving her advice over the internet.
Go to the mattresses.
Go to the mattresses, which I say every single day.
It's so funny how I feel like, I mean, talk about men and women, and maybe I'm, you know, you y'all can call me out on it, but clearly I feel like The Godfather is this very male sort of experience to have watched all those movies. I feel like every man in my life can quote The Godfather, like knows what quote is in what Godfather movie, like Godfather 2, Godfather 3, like,
it's,
you know,
out of hand. Yeah. It's out of hand. And I have a confession to make. I saw The Godfather for the very first time last year.
Yeah, I didn't even see The Godfather. I mean, I'd seen snippets of it growing up because it's always also weirdly on during the holidays, very similar to You've Got Mail and Sleepless in Seattle. It's also on, you know, but I had never really fully sat down and watched it until my husband was like, we have to watch all three of, you have to watch The Godfather series. And I'm like, I mean, you're right. I do, but it's so funny how I feel like men can quote that movie and, you know, women, again, in this movie, I feel like there's a lot of women that can quote this movie, you know, or any of Nora's movies.
Yeah. I mean, I quote this movie every single day. I think about this movie every single day. This movie dominates my life, and I want everybody always to tag me on stuff for the rest of my life because this movie is my legacy and I'm cool with that.
Well, I want to, yeah, I mean, you know, we could go on talking about sort of the dialogue in this movie, but I want to hear a little bit more about, so who else did you connect with? I mean, you got to talk to Tom, right? Did you talk to Tom and Meg?
Yes. I talked to Tom and Meg, Parker Posey and Greg Kinnear, and also Delia, her sister, beloved sister, co-writer, and basically everyone on the crew, the producers, the first assistant directors, the second assistant directors, and those people were almost more helpful in piecing together the narrative of the making of this movie, because they told me things that Tom Hanks would never tell me. You know, they saw it all. They observed everything.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, they remembered more because they weren't the star, and the making had more impact on them.
Oh, you know, sure.
It was almost more special to them in a way.
What is one of the things that stuck out to you as a story that they shared, or was there something that like you still like chuckle over, you know, even now that you found out or got to know?
Yeah. And I just want to preface this by saying it's okay to go on vacation and gain a few pounds, like no big deal. The 90s were different and you were expected to look perfect. And anyway, Tom Hanks went on vacation for a week and came back with 5 extra pounds, but it went to his face and they had to reshoot a couple scenes. And
oh my gosh.
But he's adorable.
He's so adorable. Yeah.
He's adorable at any weight. And
but
what made me laugh about that was that Nora wouldn't call him and tell him to drop a few pounds to play this romantic lead in a romantic comedy. So the producer, Lauren Shuler Donner, had to do it. And it's very hard to tell a man who was at that time the biggest star in the world, besides Tom Cruise, to lose pounds, you know, that he probably didn't have to lose to begin with.
How interesting. It's so funny that I feel like you always hear that about like actresses going through that, like, oh, you know, you've got to be skinnier, you've got to look this way, you've got to look this that way. So to hear that that's something that happened to him is sort of, that's so interesting.
Another thing is that Meg Ryan had more of a say in her costumes, because Nora had dressed her in Sleepless in Seattle like the Brett girl, like a 1980s shampoo commercial. Like, she wanted her to look, you know, not Amish, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sweet, adorable.
Sweet, yeah. Innocent, almost innocent.
Innocent.
Yeah.
And that absolutely influenced my own style, because I do dress that way. But Meg was, you know, experimenting with new hairstyles, and off camera, she was quite grungy and like Earth Mama. So she wanted to kind of instill that in Kathleen's wardrobe, but Nora was like, no, I don't like your hair. I don't like that Marc Jacobs dress that you want to wear. So Meg got to wear that Marc Jacobs dress that she wanted to wear in the Riverside Park finale. And she got to have that hairstyle. She got to keep that hairstyle, and Nora couldn't say anything about it because at that point, Meg was a huge star.
Yeah. Yeah. Meg, so she had a little bit more power. Meg had a little bit more power in You've Got Mail to have, like you said, a lot of say in her character and what she liked. And and it's so funny how people, I feel like I still read, which I actually find endearing about the character, but a lot of people are always like, well, Kathleen Kelly just never carries a purse. Like, where is she putting things? And I'm like, that's the thing about Kathleen. She just leaves with her, like, she doesn't need a lot of makeup. She doesn't need a lot of fuss. She brings her keys and she's good, I guess, you know, or she had pockets before dresses had pockets, I guess, or something. I don't know. That's what I envision.
Nora Ephron hated purses.
Right. I know. She wrote that whole essay on it. Exactly.
She had, like, she found a purse she liked, which was this random tote bag from the Met.
So it was probably like, I don't know, $2 or something.
$2. I'm sure. Like, yeah. I don't want a big Louis Vuitton purse. So the script supervisor, Diane Dreyer, was like, come on, this is unrealistic. Every woman has a purse in New York City or anywhere. And Nora's like, nope, don't want it.
But I agree with that choice because it does sort of, again, feel like Kathleen Kelly is this magical little, like, fairy running around New York City where she doesn't need the typical contrived, like, contraptions we all have. You know what I mean? Like, she's just, like, independent, you know, walking out the door. So
exactly.
I want to talk a little bit about, too, the cast, because you obviously did chat with Greg Kinnear, Parker Posey. This cast is just, I mean, look, Dave Chappelle's in it. We've talked about him. Heather Burns, Steve Zahn, who's, when he says that nut store line, I'm going to go to the nut store. I'm going over to the nut store where it's fun. I don't think anyone else could have delivered that line.
Mossy candle.
Mossy. Yeah.
I love him so much. He did not want to be interviewed. Steve Zahn, but he had a major subplot in this film that was cut because Nora's movie was like 3 hours long. So she had to cut like a subplot involving Christina and then Steve Zahn's character, but he didn't take it so well, which is fine, whatever. I mean, I was able to like piece together the narrative of this movie without Steve Zahn.
I want to talk about subplots in a second because there's obviously with Birdie, there's like that Generalissimo Franco subplot. But there's also, you know, the interesting thing about this movie, and I'm curious what Greg Kinnear, if you talk to Greg Kinnear about this, but so many people have this criticism of You've Got Mail because both characters are in relationships when, you know, they're essentially emotionally cheating on their current partners, which is Patricia Eden, played by Parker Posey, for Joe Fox, Tom Hanks's character, and then Greg Kinnear, Frank Navasky, for Kathleen Kelly, Meg Ryan's character. And what I always, how I justify it, and I think it's the only way, yes, I said that, I justify it, how I justify it in the movie, and I think Nora obviously felt this way too, which is how it's portrayed, which is that they're not with the right people for them. And even the breakup that ends up happening, you know, where, I mean, look, there's that whole wonderful scene that I always quote still if I'm like, if I think a guy is cute or, you know, I mean, even with my husband, I'll say I slobbered all over my husband. Like, you know, because Frank Navasky has that whole scene where he's being interviewed by that wonderful reporter where and Kathleen's literally calling it out. Like, she's like, are you touching, is she touching herself? Like, are you, you know? And then the same with Patricia, you know, we get to see Patricia Eden's character. is she a nice person? Like,
no!
Or just like, she's just sort of not even, I feel like she is a mirror to Joe of what Joe doesn't like about himself, almost. That's the way I see their relationship. So every time Joe is like, especially in the elevator scene, when he finally realizes like, she's not the one, when she's complaining about her contacts or like whatever, right?
When I get out of here, I'm getting my eyes lasered.
Oh, I'm getting my eyes lasered, exactly.
If I ever get out of here, I'm going to start speaking to my mama. Wonder what she's doing right this very minute.
If I ever get out of here, I'm marrying Orit. I love her. I should marry her. I don't know what's been stopping me.
If I ever get out of here, I'm having my eyes lasered.
Right. He's just sort of like, what am I doing? You know? So the only way that works is that those two people aren't right for Kathleen Kelly and Joe Fox. And they're talking to the right person for each other. So did you and Greg Kinnear talk about that at all? And like sort of because he has that whole scene about being attracted to someone else? And
I agree with you. I agree with your justification. It's absolutely right. Like, no, Patricia was absolutely the wrong woman for Joe Fox and his, you know, emotional relationship, whatever you want to call it, cheating with Shop Girl. It was just a further example of how not right Patricia was for him and how the sweet, adorable woman was or is his soulmate. Because they're real.
Yeah, exactly. If no one got from this Feel the Good conversation that all of these people are our friends, no.
They're my friends. Yeah. Greg Kinnear is hilarious. Because when he was like 33 when Nora cast him. And he had these, you know, he had a little chip on his shoulder. He didn't want to play that stock Ralph Bellamy character. You know what I mean? Like the guy who always gets dumped by the main chick. And he's like, oh, I don't want to get dumped by Meg Ryan. That's humiliating. And, you know, to me, that would be realistic. It's Meg Ryan. Come on.
Yeah.
So Greg Kinnear was like, yeah, I wanted Nora to rewrite the scene so that, you know, I would break up with Kathleen. And then they rewrote that scene again so that it was more mutual. You know, it's like, I'm not in love with you. I'm not in love with you either. But she knew because he had been on like public access television being interviewed by Sidney Ann and she was sweating over
Thank
him.
Her. Thank you, everybody.
And Kathleen was just like, you know, she, I think their relationship had been over for a while.
Yeah.
And she was just sort of going through the motions with him. Like she knew how ridiculous he is.
Yeah. And for her.
For her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She stayed with him because she was afraid of change. And NY 152 represented change. He represented the different life that Birdie had talked about, but that she had to have the courage to embark on.
Well, and, you know, again, that scene that we're referencing, you know, with Frank Navasky and Kathleen Kelly when they do break up.
And I'm so honored that you would want to be with me because you would never be with anyone who wasn't truly worthy.
I feel exactly the same way.
Don't say that.
What?
That makes it worse.
What? You don't love me. Me either.
You don't love me?
No.
But we're so right for each other.
I know. I know. Well, is there someone else? Or? Oh, that woman on television, Sidney Ann.
I mean, nothing has happened or anything, but
Oh, Frank. Is she a Republican?
I can't help myself.
I'm really glad that they did rewrite that, because I do think it does give a sense of, like, you do as a viewer go, okay, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with, like, it's like the easiest breakup in the world, right? They're both like, I'm not in love with you. I'm not in love with you either. And they're laughing. And she says that lovely line.
What about you? Is there someone else?
No. No. But there is the dream of someone else.
It's so delicious. And I mean, I've probably said delicious like 50 million times, but I mean, it's just, it is that. It's scrumptious.
That line just gives you the warm fuzzies, like the butterflies.
And the way Meg delivers it, you know, again, talking about her being this sort of whimsical, magical actress in this role. You know, something that this movie does and has this theme throughout, like we're talking about, is dreams and wishes. And so the dream of someone else, what am I going to do with my life? What's my purpose? You know, the cosmic questions, all those things. And I feel like Joe Fox's character also is going through that too. You know, even though he's a little bit more, it's like he's the big bad businessman, but he also like has never really found love. And we're seeing that with his dad, like how his dad is constantly going through relationships that fail. And he hasn't had a great role model, obviously, because his grandfather, too, clearly also had sort of a similar pattern. Right.
We are an American family.
Right. Exactly.
I'm his brother.
Yeah.
F-O-X.
F-O-X.
I mean, I love the trajectory that Joe goes through. And then Tom, you know, Tom told me this, which sounds like name dropping. And it is, because it's so cool. I got to talk to Tom.
I think that's just incredible. I'm so excited. And now sort of we all through like degrees of separation, I feel like I'm now closer
to Tom Hanks.
And therefore, everyone who's listening is also closer to Tom Hanks.
We're one degree away.
Just one degree, everybody. So, yeah, through Aaron, we're one degree away.
So he described Joe Fox as like this guy who had terrible, like a decent guy, but this guy who had terrible role models, you know, male role models. So he grew up thinking that women were this disposable thing, and he could move in with one, you know, not marry them, discard them, find another. Like they were replaceable. And it was like, he's like, you're just waiting for your luggage to come down the baggage lane. And, and then there's the next one. And it's this revolving chain of Parker Posey's. So the catalyst in his major life change is Kathleen Kelly. It's Shop Girl. It's this woman that he met on IM. She changes his life and makes him a better person. And she makes him realize, what have I been doing my entire life? I've just been going through the motions. I need to make a drastic change because I have met my soulmate, this incredible woman, and I don't want to lose her. So I've got to change.
Well, I love that you're bringing this up, because that's ultimately for me, I think, what a lot of romantic comedies do, or the ones that I really love, the romance aspect of it anyway, which is, I mean, ultimately, don't you want to be with someone who's going to help you grow? And I mean, sometimes it's hard to do that, right? Sometimes it's very hard to be in a relationship where, like, I know for me and my marriage, you know, my husband is very opposite from me. And sometimes that's a really beautiful thing. And sometimes it's a super annoying thing.
Is he more reserved?
He's definitely more reserved. He's quite witty. He's very, very witty, which, I mean, I think I'm somewhat funny, but yeah. I'm way more silly than he is. He's very like witty, you know. Nora would have appreciated his humor for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think too, though, we look at the world very differently. You know, we see it differently. And so I think the beautiful thing, the beautiful part of that is that we do push each other to grow and see things differently and ultimately transform into feeling differently or seeing something differently or thinking differently. And so I think with Joe Fox, and maybe this is not so girl power-ish for me to say, but I do think that the romantic inclination of a woman being able to sort of change a man a little bit, having that power a little bit to have him sort of recognize a certain thing about himself, or that's really romantic. And
that's extremely romantic.
It's extremely romantic. And whether, you know, look, I said a woman, but I think really, if we're talking about equality, like for both partners, like I said, for you to grow and change, there's a transformation that happens. And I think that is really romantic. That's beautiful to
me. And that goes back to Pride and Prejudice too. Elizabeth Bennet, who was as perfect as Kathleen Kelly, she made Mr. Darcy a better person. He was aloof and he was also afraid to, you know, metaphorically leave Pemberley and expand his horizons and open his heart. But she was his equal. They were, it was like a match of the mind.
Well, definitely intellectual equals, for sure.
But
yeah, not economically, but intellectually,
but
absolutely.
She was also more open than him and wittier and more in the world and stronger than Mr. Darcy. But he had some great qualities too.
He was so giving. Yeah. He helped save her. He helped with her sister. He didn't judge sort of what their family was going through when that happened with Lydia. And, you know, there's that funny line in You've Got Mail where even Joe Fox references it. And he says, it's just like that Mr. Darcy, you know, or was Mr. Darcy more prejudiced, or was that, or she's more proud? Like, he's trying to figure out who's the prejudiced one and who's the proud one in Pride and Prejudice. But Elizabeth is really proud in the book too. You know, she has a lot of pride that I think in the end of the book, when it reveals what heart Mr. Darcy has and how generous of spirit he is, then her pride, she gets taken down a notch about sort of creating this villain in her head about him.
Yeah.
And I think that happens in You've Got Mail with Kathleen and how she, you know, in a weird way, you know, he pushes her, like you said, to be braver, to problematic with just the fact that his business took over, but more so also when he's writing her letters or notes or anything, he's always sort of looking out for her and pushing her to like be a little bit stronger and to want what she wants, you know, not hide inside of herself, you know, not even hide her biting comments that she ends up saying throughout the movie, you know, to his face, like that, you know, she's like, oh, I shouldn't be saying this, but like, it's actually what she really feels.
He helped her to say what she really meant. And she was always hiding behind her mother's legacy and just kind of shrinking herself. And this is a very 2020 phrase. But he encouraged her to take up space, you know, and as a result, she's in my head is a very successful children's book or young adult author with her own brand, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And maybe Patricia is her editor.
Because Patricia would be her editor, because Patricia, like, she's got another Joe Fox. You know, she's like, whatever, it's a business. It's not personal, it's business.
It wasn't personal.
What is that supposed to be? I'm so sick of that. All that means is that it wasn't personal to you. But it was personal to me. It's personal to a lot of people. I mean, what is so wrong with being personal anyway?
Nothing.
Because whatever else anything is, it ought to begin by being personal.
Oh. That line is like, I'm always like, it's always personal. What? I'm so a Kathleen Kelly in that way.
Yeah.
Like, it's always personal.
And something to the young women listening, everything is personal in business. If you feel that you're not being treated well, if you feel, you know, a bit of sexism, a bit of discrimination, take it personally and speak up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's my soapbox for you.
Amazing. I love the way this whole conversation, we've gone in and out of talking about various different things, but, you know, again, just why I wanted to have this conversation about this movie is because, yes, it's feel good. There's so many layers to it. And that's why I think people keep coming back to it, because there's all of these different things. Now, the end of the movie where they're about to meet in the park and she doesn't know that NY152 is in fact Joe Fox. And the whole end of the movie is NY152 trying to be her friend. You know, he brings her the daisies to her apartment. There's that whole scene in her bedroom where she's about to say something sort of snide to him, and he puts his fingers over her lips. And like, that whole scene is so intimate and beautiful. And he wants to be her friend. That's what he says to her. And that very end where she's about to go meet him in Riverside Park, and they have that whole conversation.
You know, sometimes I wonder.
What?
Well, if I hadn't been Fox Books and you hadn't been the shop around the corner and you and I had just met.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have asked for your number. And I wouldn't have been able to wait 24 hours before calling you up and saying, hey, how about some coffee or, you know, drinks or dinner or a movie for as long as we both shall live.
Joe?
And you and I would never have been at war. And the only thing we'd fight about would be which video to run on a Saturday night.
Well, who fights about that?
Well, some people. Not us.
We would never.
If only.
I gotta go.
Well, let me ask you something. How can you forgive this guy for standing you up and not forgive me for this tiny little thing? I'm putting you out of business. Oh, how I wish you would.
I really have to go.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be late.
My favorite line in that scene is, oh, how I wish you would. It has such longing of him wanting her to forgive him. And longing, too, I feel like is such a human emotion. So yeah. That always guts me. That guts me when he says that line.
What? That scene was very, very hard to pull off. Like, it took a long time because they had to make it believable.
So what do you think of that scene?
Can I be honest?
Yes, please.
I don't love it. I think it's odd because at that point, like, Kathleen's a smart woman. She should have some inkling that Joe Fox is NY152. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they're pretending like they don't know that, you know, they're secret.
You don't like the deception that's involved in him sort of holding the cards there and her being unaware. But you know what's so funny? And yes. maybe it's my romantic side that I just so desperately want to believe, but I think she does know.
Really?
On some level, I think she actually does know.
I love that. I love
because, you know, in that scene, she's really listening to him. Like, there's something about the way I feel like Meg Ryan plays that scene. And, you know, maybe it's the longing for him, too, that's coming across to me that she knows because she, and because obviously she doesn't know, but even at the end when they actually do meet at the park.
Don't cry, shop girl. Don't cry. And the
dreams that you dare. I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly.
She says, I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly. I think in her heart, she did know that it was him. So,
yeah.
This is my romantic self. I don't know. Maybe I've just created this in my mind, but I don't know. I thought maybe Kathleen Kelly might have known.
She might have been in denial about it because Nora Ephron, somebody once asked Nora, what's the secret to success? You know, she's like, denial. So Meg Ryan might have, you know, Kathleen might have been in denial about the same thing. However, her body language, instinctively, when they were filming that scene, if only, she put her hand on her collarbone. Just, you know, not quite over her heart, but it could have been over her heart. And Nora loved that because that was a moment of intimacy, possibly a little teaser that she did know deep down that Joe Fox was NY-152, but still the scene drives me crazy.
Well, I have definitely read other people feel the same as you. So you are not alone in that at all. And I'm sure you know that from writing your book and also culminating probably a lot of commentary about all of these movies that you read from what people feel about them. One question I had for you about sort of the internet being what it is, you know, now especially. Wait, did you have AOL? Did you have like an
did.
You did. Okay. So did I. What was your screen name?
I don't want to tell you.
Oh my God. Okay.
It's too embarrassing. I mean, some things are better left
unsaid. Well, you know, that whole, the fact that AOL, you've got mail. Now I feel like you couldn't even have this sort of romance now with the way social media is, or right? I mean, there's something about this movie that I think really works because they don't actively know. They're learning about each other's lives only through this one communication. Whereas now, we have so much information about someone. Even any conversations I have with people for the podcast, I can research until like the day is long and actually have a ton of material that even that very own person might put out about themselves. So, what do you think Nora would have thought of that, or like dating now, or, you know, or how this would hold up if she were to write it again?
Well, I love everything you said because there's no mystery anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know everything about everyone, and that takes a lot of the fun out of kind of getting to know them naturally. Discovery.
Yeah.
So I do lament that, you know. Being an elder millennial.
Same.
But Nora would embrace it because Nora wasn't somebody who looked back on the past and thought things were better in the old days. She wasn't a Luddite like Frank Navasky. So she would have embraced that. Nora would love knowing everything about everybody.
Sure.
She would be going down Instagram rabbit holes at 3 a.m. like the rest of us do, and let's all be honest, she would be doing that. Like, it would, you know, she was gossipy. Like,
she loved it. Yeah,
gossip is information.
She loved the dish. Yes,
it's not necessarily all bad. So she would find a way to embrace current day dating, and she would love it. She would, and her sons would, you know, give. Her sons are our age, like they know, and they would, you know, give her some insights about like technology nowadays. So she would keep up with it for sure.
Yeah, it's just, it's so, it's such an interesting thing to think about, you know, how it would have all come together now in the time that we're in. And, you know, the final thing that I sort of wanted to chat with you about this movie and just about your book in general, you know, writing this, what was sort of the overall thing that you took away from writing this book, learning about Nora, learning about Tom and Meg and just all of these different projects like that have mean so much to so many people?
Yeah. For sure. I learned two things. Excuse me. Allergies, everyone. I learned two things. Number one, it is never too late to live your dreams, to fulfill your dreams, to make a change. Nora was 51 years old when she, excuse me, Nora was 50 years old when she directed her first movie, This Is Your Life. Like, it is never too late to direct a romantic comedy, should you ever want that in your life, or to write one. Number two, edge is overrated. Being edgy, being too cool for school is overrated. Go toward the warm people. Go toward the uncool people. It's okay to like pumpkin spice lattes. It's okay to love Christmas. And it's okay to...
Who are you? Are you just describing me? Did you just look at my...
It's okay to
be like, that's y'all.
No, but no, I'm not describing you. I'm describing me.
Me. That's why we're kindred spirits.
It's okay to want that peppermint mocha. Like, come on. Everyone tries so hard to be Addison Rae. But come on. I would rather be like Meg Ryan and You've Got Mail. Come on.
It's Kathleen Kelly. Yeah.
Be you.
I love that that is what you got out of it, because I do think, again, you know, Nora is that she was highly just like a really authentic person, you know, and I think she always stuck by that. She didn't ever hide what she felt. She always encouraged, I think, a lot of women anyway to have a voice, to be strong, to not, I think her Wellesley speech, actually her graduation speech was, and don't quote me y'all because I can't remember it fully, but she says this line that's like, be the heroine of your own life, never be the victim.
Yeah.
And so I think that is very much, you know, what she writes in a lot of her female characters is this, be the heroine of your own life. And
yes.
And I'm really attracted to that, I think, in general, in the romantic comedy genre, of having women and their stories be the center of the entire plot line. You know, yes, it's about love and falling in love. And some people could argue and say, oh, well, it's about, always about just finding a man. But it's actually not. It's
Thank
about
you.
Discovering who that woman is. Who are you?
Thank you for saying that, because a lot of people want to dismiss the romantic comedy genre and Nora's movies as just like, oh, they're all about women finding a man, like women defining themselves only by if they're married. No, it is about women finding themselves, sometimes through meeting the man of their dreams, but it's about them finding a purpose in life. And it's beyond rom-com in a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that whole thing that I feel strongly about. This is a whole thing about transformation. There's a transformation that happens in these movies to people's souls, to people's hearts, to their minds, you know, the characters and also the people watching them.
It's also a love letter. Absolutely. It's also a love letter to New York City.
Yeah.
And to cities and the small villages that cities contain. And everyone, like, gosh, nowadays, cities are scary. Oh my God. No, actually, cities are a series of small villages and full of wonderful, kind, smart people. Mm-hmm. And I love that her movies kind of turn New York City into a small town.
Well, because it is. I mean, if you've lived here, you've lived here before. I know you don't live here anymore, but, you know, East Village is a little neighborhood. The Upper East Side is the Upper West Side. Chelsea,
I miss my dry cleaner. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know, because you get to know everybody in the neighborhood. You get to see them all the time. Absolutely. Well, the final thing that I wanted to do is I actually wanted to read a piece from your book. It's the very end of the You've Got Mail chapter. And I highly recommend everyone go get I'll Have What She's Having, because Erin does get, I mean, like Nora loves some gossip. You got gossip in this book, but you also got, it's perfect for somebody who loves film, who's like a nerd about knowing on set stories. You have a ton of on set stories. You have a ton of like just honestly history in this book too, because it sort of goes through Nora's, you know, different time periods. So we're talking about the 80s and the 70s and the 90s and sort of what trends are around during that time, or, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff in this book. So Erin, I'm so excited again to chat with you. Thank you for giving me your time. It's such a wonderful book. But one of the things I wanted to read at the very end of this chapter, you have, You've Got Mail became an instant classic, eternally replaying on television. These days, it provides some welcome comfort in uncertain times. Here's Diane Dreyer. One of the things Nora's trying to say in the movie is that there are lots of ways to fall in love. And when you fall in love with someone, you want to fall in love with them truly. Because she loved words so much, she made it very clear that you could actually fall in love, even online to some extent, through revealing who you are by what you say and how you say it, and your bravery in saying it and saying it to the other person. Write the letter. If it tells you anything, it says, write the letter, use your voice.
I love that so much. Oh my gosh.
It gave me chills. It gave me chills. And I'm so thankful to you that you wrote this book, compiles all of this. And Diane Dreyer was her script supervisor.
And
so,
literally, Diane speaks in sentences like that. Like, ugh, when you're interviewing somebody, you can't ask for that. It's like, wow, Diane, like, can I just like
be in your brain, please?
Publish the transcript. Yeah. Of our interview.
Tell me about it. Oh my goodness. Amazing. It was so beautiful, eloquent. And I just think it just sums up exactly. Write the letter. Use your voice. I just adore that. Well, Erin, to end out the show, I always ask all of my guests to share a little bit of how they can spread the good. So are there any charities that you really care about that you can share that we can all support? Donating is great, but if you can't donate monetarily, that's totally fine. You can support in other ways. Is there a charity that you want to share that you really care about?
I love the National Association of Black Journalists. It's an organization of journalists and students and media professionals who are committed to diversifying newsrooms across the country.
That's incredible, because you started out working for the AP, right? Like, yeah. You started out in journalism and still are in journalism. You didn't just start out. You're always going to be in journalism, and you're a writer too. But I love that, because diversifying our newsrooms is very important, because the news needs to reflect who our society is. It needs to encompass everyone so that the news reflects everyone.
Absolutely. All newsrooms need to be more inclusive. And this is a fantastic organization, and I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Well, I will tag that organization in the episode notes, so all of you can choose to donate or support however you can. And then, Erin, I do something called Fields of Five at the end of every conversation. It's where I'm going to give you five words, and you just have to tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Here we go. Feel the five. Home.
Chicago.
Joy.
My husband.
Fear.
Donald Trump.
Regret.
My number one regret is seeing Nora across the room at a Tribeca Film Festival party. that I was covering for The Hollywood Reporter. And I didn't go up to her and ask for a quote for my story because I was too nervous to approach her. What if she rejected me?
I know. The worst thing in the world would be like, yeah, you don't want your first moment with Nora Ephron to be like, get away from me, please.
Exactly.
But do you think that she would have? But if you had done it, I think she would have. She would have engaged.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like Robert De Niro may have put his hand in my face like, no questions, please. But Nora loved talking to young writers. She mentored young writers and she loved having an opinion. Like she just wanted, she loves being quoted. So she would have talked to me, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, yeah, I mean, I also wrote Nora Ephron a letter. So that's something that I regret not ever sending to her. So about how much I loved her work. But anyway, you know, you'll regrets. We have them.
Regrets. I've had a few.
Hope.
Oh, Hope. The Next Generation.
I love that. Erin, I can't tell you enough how much fun it's been to sort of do a deep dive into such a beloved movie of mine. I am going to say one more time, everybody, I'll Have What She's Having, How Nora Ephron's Three Iconic Films Saved the Romantic Comedy by Erin Carlson. You'll have to go get it. You can get it anywhere books are sold. It's so your little small independent bookstore. If you want to support your independent bookstore, I love that. Or just order it. It's so good. And Erin, I mean, the deep dive that you do into all these wonderful films is so much fun. And you're such a beautiful writer. And I'm so happy that now that we're connected to each other, and also that now I'm one degree away from Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan and all of the cast of You've Got Mail now through you. So,
oh my gosh, thank you so much. And I live vicariously through you because you live in the most beautiful city in the world.
Oh, well, it will welcome you back with open arms anytime you want to come. When it's safe to travel again, we'll welcome you back. You were a New Yorker for a little bit, so I think once a New Yorker. My attitude is once a New Yorker, always a New Yorker.
Always a New Yorker.
Yeah, you have it in your blood after you've lived here for a little while. And rest in peace, Nora Ephron. I think you and I both think she was just the best.
Legend.
Completely. Oh, y'all, that conversation just made me happy. I know we gushed a lot, but I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope it made you feel good, because it made me feel good to stroll down memory lane and listen to You've Got Mail again and really get all of the fun anecdotes from Erin and Scoop and hear her commentary and her opinion. And, you know, like we said at the end of this, Nora Ephron is a legend. She's legendary, and her legacy has left obviously a mark on so many people, including myself and Erin. I adore Erin. You know, we're kindred spirits. I think you could hear that in our conversation. And, you know, maybe I'll have her back on Feel the Good again to do the other two romantic comedies that are in her book. If y'all enjoyed this conversation, let me know. And maybe Erin and I can get together again to do When Harry Met Sally or Sleepless in Seattle, because, you know, I'm not going to say no. You know, I usually always do a takeaway section at the end of the conversation, but I think I only have one takeaway from this, which is write the letter, use your voice. I think that sums it up. I think that says everything we need to say. And I just felt like this conversation was so special. It meant a lot to me. It made me feel good. It made me feel comforted. And I'm so thankful to Erin for taking the time. She shared the National Association for Black Journalists If y'all can donate, please do. I will tag it in the episode notes. Support them if you can in other ways, if you can't donate. And I'll also tag all of Erin's social media in the episode notes. Go follow her. Go check out what she's doing. She's got another book, Queen Meryl, about our queen, Meryl Streep. So you can read that book as well. She's such a gifted writer, and she really sources just a ton of information for any of the books that she does. So I highly recommend, if you're into film and you want to read about Meryl Streep, or you want to read about the three iconic films that saved the romantic comedy from Nora Ephron, go get I'll Have What She's Having or Queen Meryl from Erin Carlson. And again, follow her on social, tag her in your You've Got Mail fun promo, your TikTok videos, your memes, whatnot. Her account and the things that people tag her in always make me laugh and delight me. So definitely go check her out and follow all that she's doing and support her. And thank you for supporting Feel the Good, everybody. I hope this conversation again made you feel all the feels, gave you all the cozies, and as always, all the love and light. Have a great week.